Fathers.
You're a stand, don't labour the point. And what have they ever given us in return? The aqueduct? What? The aqueduct?
Oh, yeah, they did give us that. That's true, yeah.
And the sanitation.
Oh, yeah, the sanitation, Rich. Remember what the city used to be like?
Yeah, all right, I'll grant you, the aqueduct and sanitation are two things the Romans had done.
And the roads.
Well, yeah, obviously the roads. I mean, the roads go without saying, don't they? Apart from the sanitation, the aqueduct, and the roads.
Irrigation.
Medicine. Education. Yeah, all right, fair enough.
And the wine.
Yeah, that's something we've really missed, Reg, the Romans left.
Public baths.
And it's safe to walk in the streets at night now, Reg.
Yeah, they certainly know how to keep order. Let's face it, the only ones who could in a place like this.
All right, but apart from the sanitation, the medicine, education, wine, public order, irrigation, road, the fresh water system and public health, what have the Romans ever done for us?
Brought peace?
Oh, peace! Shut up!
All right. I love that, man.
Bit of nothing like a bit of Monty Python absurdity. No one does absurdity like the Python.
There's no equivalent to the Pythons around today, man. That's what I've noticed.
No, I mean, comedians are still studying them.
Mm. Just genius. And you know what happens when you introduce fluoride into a society, right? If you only shift an IQ point, one little point to the left, you're half the number of geniuses.
there's a whole thing about IQ tests, too. I mean, I think the IQ tests are essentially developed by eugenicists. Again, that's a whole other story. I think before we were talking about the reasons why the elites have repeatedly attacked Jews, quote unquote. And it's continuing to this day. So the same sort of themes that the same sort of propaganda that the Nazis were blatantly propagating are being distributed more in a more subtle way. So now, it's not, well, in some quarters of the so-called truth movement, they are saying, the Zionists are taking control of governments and running the world and so on. A more moderate version of that is the Jewish lobby in the United States is forcing or directing the United States to do Israel's bidding for it. Now, this automatically creates an absurdity, because if there's a Jewish lobby dispensing propaganda in the United States that's making the United States do all these things for Israel, then why is it that the United States is actually attacking Israel? Now, I imagine a lot of people would be now, on hearing that, be going, what the hell is he talking about? The United States isn't attacking Israel. They give them billions of dollars of weapons and da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, the way the United States attacks Israel, and I must add, the full collaboration of the Israeli establishment, they do it in many ways, but one of the ways is by maintaining this charade called, it was called the Oslo peace process. Now, to get some idea of that, I don't know how much you remember about the first Gulf War, like back in 91, where...
I was like 6 years old. That's how much I remember.
Oh, okay. in that war, the United States basically crashed Iraq. And they did it primarily, like the geopolitical purpose, the main geopolitical purpose was to weaken Iraq in comparison to Iran. Right. Now, what happened very soon after that, in 91, was that the United States then put enormous diplomatic and economic pressure on Israel to force it into, I think it was called the Madrid Conference or whatever, and that morphed into the Oslo peace process, and that was to bring Yasser Arafat and his Fatah thugs to lord it over the Gaza and West Bank Arabs. Now, Fatah, what's Fatah?
Did they by chance call the Oslo peace process because it was oh so slow?
No, it's an Orwellian name because it's not a peace process at all and was never intended to be. It was essentially a sleight of hand to bring the Fatah, which was created by the Nazi movement, to get some idea of the history of that. Well, first of all, I guess I should plug a website where people can go and look at detailed documented research on all of it. Because what I say now might sound absolutely crazy to a lot of people, but so for anyone thinking that, I would direct them to the website hirhome.com. That's hirhome.com. HIR stands for Historical and Investigative Research. And its editor-in-chief, a guy called Professor Francisco Gil White. And he at one stage had a pretty nice job at the University of Pennsylvania, and he was illegally fired. Now, part of it was because he started exposing the Western media's propaganda against the Serbs during the 1990s Balkans War. But the thing that really, really pissed off his higher-ups was that he exposed that the Palestinian movement, which of course, I'm talking about Palestinian people, I'm talking about the political movement, the ones running the show, was descended from a senior Nazi, a guy called Haji Amin al-Husseini. And Haji Amin al-Husseini was appointed by the British during the British Palestine Mandate period as the as the Mufti of Jerusalem, and he was from what's known as the Effendi class of Palestine.
Did you say the Bookie of Jerusalem?
No, Mufti.
Mufti.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an Islamic title. And yeah, now with World War II coming on and so on, Haji Amin al-Husseini moved more towards the Nazis. He was involved in the pro-Nazi coup in Iraq, which also involved, I think, the Saddam Hussein's uncle. And then that was ultimately overthrown by the British. He then fled to Iran, and from there, I think he went to the Japanese embassy there, and then from there he went to Mussolini's Italy, and then from there to Germany. And there's pictures of him with Hitler and so on. And Hitler gave him a radio show and so on and so forth, and put him in charge of the Waffen-SS, which was like the Bosnian Muslim Nazi division. And he was co-architect with Adolf Eichmann of the so-called Final Solution. At the end of World War II, Yugoslavia put in a thing to, you know, have him put on trial at Nuremberg and so on. He was put under house arrest in a luxury villa in France, and then mysteriously escaped, where he popped up in Egypt, run by Gamal Abdel Nasser at the time, and he became the mentor, none other than Yasser Arafat, and the current president of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, or also known as Abu Mazen. So Fatah, you know, basically is the PLO. And, I mean, it's quite a long and complex history. And people can go to hirhome.com, and there's a number of links. There's whole things on Israel and the Arab-Israeli conflict. There's also stuff on Yugoslavia and various other issues too. He's also done a very good analysis of the global warming scam as well, incidentally. So essentially, and another thing that's important to remember is at the end of World War II, the U.S. intelligence alphabet soup, the CIA and all the rest of it, were formed with the absorption of tens of thousands of Nazi war criminals. and
tens of thousands of Nazi war criminals.
Yes. Yes. This is all quite documented.
That's like off Operation Paperclip, right?
Operation Paperclip was part of it. So focusing just on Operation Paperclip is a bit of a whitewash because the operations extended beyond that. There was a guy, I'm trying to think of his name, Christopher Simpson. Christopher Simpson in 1988 wrote a book called Blowback, which documented all of this with, you know, like he'd done freedom of information stuff and so on, and he documented all of this.
So the Third Reich didn't lose World War II, they just changed venues.
Basically. But another thing that's important to point out too is that the Nazi movement would not have got anywhere if it hadn't been for the support of primarily US and but also British establishment figures. Most, if not all, of
the US gave. The US gave Adolf Hitler before the war something like $1 trillion at the height of the Great Depression.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. But also, it's not necessarily the US itself, right? But there were the various Baron families, such as the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and the Harrimans and so on, who financed the eugenics movement.
And there was Prescott Bush as well, who was... He was managing a little bit of that money.
Henry Ford as well. So it could be said that the Nazi movement was an extreme, you know, it was the eugenics movement taken to extremes. So extreme that it actually discredited the eugenics movement somewhat. And so after World War II, the eugenics movement had to change its name.
Well, yeah, they had the American Eugenics Society, and they renamed themselves. What was it? Some obscure. Oh, yeah, Planned Parenthood.
Yes, yeah, the eugenics movement still exists in America, but it's hidden, and it lurks in the background. All the stuff about the dangers of vaccines and all that sort of thing that can be traced to the eugenics movement. As you know, Dr. Len Horowitz has done a lot of research in that area. So essentially it would be bizarre in the extreme if the American establishment, who funded and created the Nazi movement and then absorbed it back into itself at the end of World War II, was suddenly pro-Israel. It would take quite a stretch for that to be the case. Now, combining with this, and this is where this whole thing does start to become very complicated, and so it's not surprising that a lot of people, both pro and anti-Israel, tend to get very confused, is that there was a certain segment of the Zionist movement which had pretty much a similar eugenics-type ideology to... The Western establishments. And by that, like, a lot of people go, oh, yeah, well, we know all that because, you know, the Israelis, they're practicing eugenics against the Arabs. No. If you actually look at the history of the eugenics movement in Israel, it was actually attacking other Jews. Like, for example, and there's a guy called Barry Charmish who's exposed this somewhat and various others too. If people want to look into it, they can Google, you know, the ringworm children, right? In the 1950s, I think it was something like 100,000 Sephardic Jewish children had their brains irradiated with obscenely high levels of X-ray.
Up to 10 times.
Oh, I think even more than that. But either way, it was purportedly to deal with ringworm. But the fact is that the vast majority of these 100,000 Sephardic Jewish children either ended up dying of all sorts of horrible things, brain tumours and the like, although they're so damaged that you know, a lot of them are at the fringes of Israeli society today. No, they did not irradiate the heads of 100,000 Arab children. It was 100,000 Jewish children. So that's if you like, that faction of Zionism called Labor Zionism could be seen as the you could look at it as the Nazi infiltration of the Jewish movement. And it's that faction which is essentially in control of the Israeli body politic today. And it is that faction which is facilitating this charade of a peace of a peace process. And I believe that one of the main functions of the whole of the Palestinian movement is to demoralize Israel, to throw it off track, so that all sorts of other things can call into play as well. So we've now got the Muslim Brotherhood have taken over Egypt fully with US support. That they've pretty much taken over Libya with full NATO bombardment support. It looks like they're getting set to take over Syria. So Israel is basically being surrounded. I mean, it always has been, but now it's like we're going to another ad break.
Yeah. I was going to say, it kind of sounds like, I don't know.
The barbarians are massing at the hills, Emperor. What will we do?
Well, it could be looked like at that, but...
Anyway,
we can talk about that after the
stereotyping. Break. Right back, ladies and gentlemen. It's an extrashow.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go freaking nuts. My very special guest is Nigel Waddington. Is it Waddington or Waddington? It matters not.
Waddington.
Spellings. Waddington, okay. www.hirhome.com is the website, and another site to plug is emperors-clothes.com. That's emperors-clothes.com. That's emperors with an O. All right, Nigel, welcome back. Where were we?
Oh, going freaking nuts. we're talking about the geopolitical maneuvers in the Middle East at the moment. One of the things that's of great concern to a number of us who are doing this kind of research on the web is that the next genocide of Jews is being prepared. The groundwork is being prepared. And it's being engineered by the establishment. Now, one thing I want to make clear is I don't want to be fatalistic about it. It's not inevitable. But it's rapidly getting close to becoming imminent. And it is the reason it is happening is essentially for the reasons we've been talking about, that the tyrannical elites see the Jewish movement as a threat. And they've had to tolerate it and, adapt to it somewhat, particularly in the Western world. I think that they are now trying to make their final move to wipe it out entirely. That like going by the evidence of what's happening, not only on the geopolitical front, but by looking at the propaganda within the West, particularly directed at people who are purportedly interested in things like social justice and truth and so on, looking at the kind of propaganda that is directed at people like that, it's not looking good, and it's a real concern that people who are purportedly interested in social justice are, in effect, attacking the movement which essentially spawned a lot of the ideas which they embrace. And that, I believe, if I had to sum up in short order why the Western counterintelligence systems are dispensing this kind of propaganda, it serves a number of agendas. one thing, it, and this is very important, it creates absurdities in people's minds. If people start believing things which are just patently not true and demonstrably untrue, they're embracing absurdities, and that inhibits people's abilities to think properly. And if people can't think clearly and with clarity and with discernment, then they're not really going to be much use against a sophisticated adversary, such as the global criminal syndicate. Another key reason, I believe, is that it effectively turns Jews who might be interested in helping these movements away from them. So, for example, put yourself in the shoes of someone who's Jewish or someone who's Israeli, who's sort of aware of some of the agendas unfolding, the global banking scam, fluoridation, you name it. They're starting to become aware of this sort of stuff, and they go on the web to have a look, and just about every forum they go to that discusses these issues is also basically telling them that you're a monster, you're Jewish, and oh, and the Talmud says this, and all these things which simply aren't true. It's quite understandable that they'd be turned off by that, right? And that's the other part of the agenda, is it starts to push Jews more into the pro-Western establishment camp. That is why a lot of forums that are purportedly pro-Israel back the United States, even though a lot of them are sort of going, oh, no, but Obama is no good and this sort of thing. Unfortunately, because the anti-establishment movement is so poisoned with a lot of these anti-Zionist and often outrightly anti-Semitic themes, the other camp, which doesn't have those themes, but it's not so overtly, is pro-establishment. So it's an absolute mess, right, like that. So they are the key reasons for it. And also, I believe that the purpose of this propaganda is to utterly discredit the Jewish movement, so that if the establishment is successful with their plans to commit, the final genocide on the Jews, that the Jewish movement will be so discredited in the eyes of the world people that it will be extremely difficult, if not impossible, for it to reemerge. That is my real concern, and that is why I focus on it. Not because I'm some mindless Israeli file or anything like that, but that I can see from the point of view of a bigger picture that there are a very real reason why this kind of propaganda is being dispensed.
Okay, so that's the bad guys want to get rid of them. Why the bad guys got something against the Jews?
Well, like we were discussing before, the bad guys being tyrants, the Jewish movement is specifically anti-tyrant. I mean, there are all sorts of things within the Torah, and there are other people who can articulate this better than I can, but there are all kinds of facilities within the Torah that make it quite clear that you've got to treat other people with respect. Even, this is one of those ironies. People will often say, oh, the Jews are into slavery. They talk about slaves in the Torah and da-da-da-da. Well, that's because within the context of the Torah, slave basically means employee, right? Making it a bit simplistic.
Well, that's interesting, because my definition of being an employee is being a slave.
Oh, not necessarily. Not if it's an amicable relationship and a fair and just one. And the point is that the Torah has all sorts of things that, masters cannot mistreat slaves. It would be better to say masters cannot mistreat servants. So, for example, within the Torah, there's all sorts of codes saying that, a master who does mistreat his servant has to basically let that servant go and continue paying and things like that. So, like I said, there are other people who can articulate that better than I can. But the point is, the Jewish movement has traditionally been anti-tyrant and anti-tyranny, And that is why the tyrannical factions within the elite want to get rid of it. It's a threat to them.
Okay. So, and that would be the reason why there's a massive anti-Zionist, anti-Jewish, pro-Nazi sort of eclectic bunch of factions out there that are all coming from it from different angles, basically just so that they can get a religion, which is what being Jewish is, wiped off the map because it specifically doesn't want tyranny and it stands in the face in terms of belief structure against the tyrants who want control of the entire planet.
Basically, yes. And they, so far, have been very successful in doing it. Now, I'm hoping, you know, my little humble efforts, and the humble efforts of just a few other people that are on the internet to at least get the message out there that, hey, this is propaganda and you're being misled. And I am enlivened by the fact that a lot of people who get caught into the anti-Zionist camp aren't doing it, you know, aren't doing it to be, you know, because they hate it. They've been led there because they've been led to believe that Zionism is all about tyranny and global control and that sort of thing.
Now, what actually is Zionism then, if it's not just all about control and enslaving people?
Well, there are a number of different interpretations of it, but within a political concept, Zionism is about the right of the Jewish people to live safely in their traditional homeland, which is what used to be called Judea, right? And so in that sense, it is on a par with movements of indigenous activists in various countries throughout the world who are seeking sovereignty within those countries. So Australian Aborigines, Maoris in New Zealand, what are called the Indians in America, or in the Americas, because they're throughout there. There are various indigenous movements throughout the world, and I would put it on the table that Zionism can be seen as the political movement of the indigenous Jewish people. And in fact, if people Google Zionist Freedom Alliance, well, unfortunately, the Zionist Freedom Alliance website no longer exists, right? But there are blogs. So if people Google Zionist Freedom Alliance and declaration, they will actually find the declaration of the Zionist Freedom Alliance. And if they read that, you'll be very hard-pressed to find anything much in the declaration of the Zionist Freedom Alliance which is in any way offensive. It's very much about liberation and about forming honourable treaties with other groups, with, you know, around the Middle East and so on.
So kind of the word Zionist has been turned into a bad word by the truth movement the same way conspiracy theorist has been turned into a bad word by the establishment, just to demonise people.
In a sense, though the term conspiracy theorist is also has been turned into a bad word by the truth movement itself, because there are so many people within the truth movement who fit the stereotype of the crazy, rambling conspiracy theorist that it's almost as though they're playing the role that the Western media then pulls them up on, you know what I mean? There's different interpretations of Zionism, but that is the one I basically go with. And certainly if you ask any anti-Zionist, like particularly the ones who are talking about global control and stuff, they're saying that it's about global control, what a Zionist is, they generally won't be able to answer you. And when they start saying things like, oh, the Zionists did the Russian Revolution and so on and so forth. The Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. Well, then you can tell they're skirting the shoals of absurdity, because for most of the history of the Soviet Union and Israel, the Soviet Union was an enemy of Israel. The Soviet Union backed a lot of the various Arab states which were attacking Israel. So, and also, if you actually look at who backed the Bolshevik Revolution, you'll find it's essentially the same elites who back the Nazis and who dominate the US Federal Reserve and the US body politic in general.
And the same people who financed the war in Afghanistan and Iraq and goodness knows what, however many other conflicts that they're being involved in. You know, it's just the same two sides of every major conflict. In fact, this pretty is interesting because it's Anzac Day. I wanted to call up, you know, New Zealand Talk Radio and try to say that over air, you know, full respect to the troops and everything who have died, but all I'm saying is they died to serve an agenda of ruthless criminal psychopaths with copious quantities of cash who are playing both sides for their own ends. And your loved ones who died so long ago died as martyrs and puppets for pieces of trash who didn't care about their lives whatsoever. And an entire generation of young, upstanding, the most honourable men in society wiped out.
That is basically it. And that is one of the things that really pisses me off, actually, is that if you like, some of the themes which might attract people to the military, which is basically if you mess with me and people I care about, you're dead, are not in and of themselves a bad thing. We need warriors. Right? What really pisses me off is that they get used by snivelling weaklings, right, who sit in ivory towers, who, yeah, don't give a toss about them and use them for all sorts of nefarious agendas. Yeah, I mean, that has to stop.
Now, see, is there anything inherently unpatriotic or disrespectful for the dead that I've said there? I don't think so.
No, I didn't detect anything.
But that opinion, oh my God, how few people would really have the guts to actually say that opinion on today of all days, you know, in a public forum, because it's the truth and people will be offended. You know, you're saying my grandfather died as a puppet or something like that. I'm not saying that. Okay. The whole world is rigged. And unless you want the next generation to be sacrificed in some kind of over-bloated blood-fest ritual financed umpteen times by the labor and future generations' wealth, if you want that to happen again, by all means, keep ignoring the truth.
Mm.
And keep honoring people that died and not the reasons why they died and how much of a tragedy it actually really is. The truth is not remembered about their passing. That we continue to perpetuate lies that allow future generations to die for the same reason. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyestershow.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's our final segment with Nigel Waddington. Website is hirhome.com as well as emperors-clothes.com. You wanted to round off today's interview by talking about the law.
Oh, well, not specifically, but just one thing I do want to make clear for the listeners is that hirhome.com and emperors-clothes.com are not actually my website, but they are websites I would recommend for people who want to research the sort of stuff we've been talking about.
You have a YouTube channel, don't you?
Yes, my YouTube channel is Changeling9AU. So that's Changeling9AU. That's my YouTube channel. I haven't actually made any videos for a couple of years. I plan to get back into it pretty soon.
Okay. Well, I mean, today, here we are. We're going to make a YouTube video out of this, I guess, so.
Yeah, well, I'll certainly share around with all my subscribers and so on.
Yeah. All three of them.
I'll probably upload it onto my channel.
Yeah. No worries, man. That's what it's all there for, eh? You know, I should probably cut it up into segments and stuff. Right. Well, uh-oh. Have we lost you?
No, I'm here.
Okay. Phew.
I was just thinking something just went wrong there, but nothing went wrong. It's all good. Panic averted. So,
did you say something about a letter or something you wanted to read out?
Well, I guess it actually does illustrate some of the stuff that I go through in the background here, but it's kind of, I guess I've elucidated. I have to elucidate. Anyway, this is a message from Bradley Thunderbird Phoenix, who was supposed to be on the show today. We had a mix-up, and I sent Nigel the American time zones. So for him, it would be tomorrow. But he thought it was today. And so my guest today sends me this email saying, I tried to communicate you that with this Wednesday was my birthday and I'm not working on this day until 5 p.m. Mountain Time, which is 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And my name is Bradley Thunderbird Phoenix. I've been calling him Bradley Starbird, unfortunately. And not Bradley Starbird. We're not communicating. I told you my work schedule and I told you my name. What the F is going on? F is abbreviated. So, piss on the interview. I don't want to do it. And that's the end of any communication between us. My God. You know, I'm such a horrible person. I got his name wrong and didn't answer an email promptly enough. I could have just flicked him over to tomorrow because Nigel was coming on today. That was all that had to happen, but he doesn't want to come on. But it was so convenient, just automatically, just boom, here's Nigel. And then I get a message from Tom Filer, who's a associate of Lindsay Williams, who does Wall Street trading and stuff like that, and helps people, particularly retired couples, keep their wealth and so they don't go bankrupt during the upcoming any crises and stuff like that. And he's going to come on for 2 hours tomorrow. And hopefully we'll take some callers and give the listeners the opportunity to call in and get some financial advice from a real pro. Now, when things slot in like that, just bang, 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 one person's rude to me and then all of a sudden two cool dudes show up for me. The life of Vinnie Eastwood, I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, is a blessed existence, and I acknowledge every minute of it. And it's freaking awesome. Well, particularly yourself, Nigel. I was really glad that you turned up today, man.
Well, it's lucky, because I thought it was on for today. But because of the times you gave me were in the American time zone, it would have actually been tomorrow, in which case I wouldn't have been able to come on, because I'm due in the Victorian Supreme Court tomorrow.
Well, mate. Well, tell us what you're going to do in the Supreme Court tomorrow, then. Oh, unless it's sub judice. I
don't know.
Did you get the pun there? Sub judice.
what I'm doing tomorrow is appealing to a judge of the Supreme Court against the decision of an associate judge.
If you're appealing to a judge, do you have any small boys for him?
No. See. I'm actually of the view that the main problems with the processes of the law, well, like if you look at a lot of the, like the sovereignty, if you want to call it the sovereignty or common law movement or whatever you want to call it, look on their website, they'll all constantly go on about the corruption of the judiciary. Now, while no doubt that there is a certain amount of corruption within the judiciary, I don't think that's really our main problem. I think our main problem is that most people are wholly ignorant of the law, or not even ignorant, but unaware. And so you have all these Pied Pipers within these grassroots law movements who typically, apart from anything else, will spout the usual anti-Jewish and anti-Zionist lines too. It's directed at, that's one of the target audiences. The kind of propaganda we've been talking about today is, if you like, grassroots law movements. They typically, these Pied Pipers will say the following two things. They will say, you have all these rights and you can do all these amazing things and da-da-da, and you look at the law, you can, there's all these things you can do. And then they will then say that the judiciary are corrupt, so you can't actually do it. So, in other words, it's a memeplex that is designed to neutralise people, because you're telling people you've got all these rights, but hey, you don't. So, what I'm trying to do, like what my particular matter is about. Cut a long story short, I had a civil matter in one of the magistrates' courts. The magistrates' court is like the lowest on the rung in the hierarchy of courts. And I wanted a friend of mine to present my case for me because he's had more courtroom experience and so on. And I sought leave from the magistrate to have him appear for me because I'd assigned him a power of attorney. The magistrate wouldn't have a bit of it. The magistrate was a complete a-hole, basically. So I adjourned the matter and so on, and then launched what's known as a judicial review. Now, a judicial review is where you take a matter of law, which includes denial of natural justice, to one of the Superior Court, which in the case of Victoria is the Supreme Court of Victoria, for adjudication on a point of law. And I've got about 3 minutes left, have we? Yep.
That's right.
And it went before an associate judge, and she gave me a very fair hearing. You know, I've got no complaints about the way she conducted the hearing and so on. But ultimately she ruled against me, particularly on the issue of power of attorney. And her reasons with respect to her, there was numerous flaws with them. So I'm appealing to a judge of the Supreme Court to because my matter was thrown out on the basis that it had, quote, no real prospect of success. And I believe it does it and can demonstrate that it does have a real prospect of success. So I'll find out tomorrow whether the judge of the Supreme Court agrees with me or not.
Well, let's see if it does. And, you know, court corruption, it's kind of like hit and miss, I've found. Some judges are actually still, you know, good, decent people. And then there's other judges, in many cases that are well documented, at least in New Zealand, by Vince Seymour at kiwisfirst.co.nz, explored massive holes in the system. Like, I think it was like 180 judges, and like 60% of them are related, like by first cousin or something, at least.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But the important thing to remember is, like, particularly once you get to the level of the Supreme Court, is they can't just rule against you for the sake of ruling against you. They have to provide reasons. And so, and there have been numerous rulings throughout the West, and certainly within Australia and at the Supreme Court and High Court levels, that the primary function of the courts is to ensure justice through the application of the due process of law. So you've got to remind them of that. And if you put that to them and explain, like, I'm basically of the view that ultimately, if your cause is just, like, if you're not just trying to get out of something or screw somebody over by using the legal system, if your cause is essentially just, the law will ultimately support you, but if there are hurdles in the way. And my particular matter of power of attorney, I believe, is extremely just because it seems to me that the standard practice is that a person can either represent themselves in court or have a legal professional do it for them. I'm arguing that a person should be able to assign power of attorney to someone who they know and trust, who is presumably more competent than they are at, you know, courtroom presentation, to present their case for them. So I'm making it clear that this is an issue not just simply for me in my particular matter, but it is a matter of great public interest.
Mm. Okay. Well, Nigel, thank you very much for your time. And also, ladies and gentlemen, check out his website. Oh, sorry. His YouTube channel, youtube.com/changeling9au. It's changeling9au is the YouTube channel. We'll have links up on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. archives, as well as the other two websites that he recommends you look at, hirhome.com, emperors-clothes.com as well. Nigel, thank you.
Thanks very much for having me.
You're very welcome. Okay, now, lastly, before we go, I think we've finally got a bit, the music will be coming on right now.
And I wanted to remind people that we're having a wee bit of a financial crisis over at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com because of the PayPal issues. A lot of people unsubscribed and didn't resubscribe. So if you are capable of contributing on a monthly, regular basis to help keep this show running, you can go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and either make an automatic payment directly into the bank account that is there, or you can click on the subscribe button and go through PayPal. $1 a month, $5 a month. One guy's even doing $50 a month as a donation. So that's what we need here in order to keep everything going without any hiccups, is a constant financial security, as we all do. And I very much appreciate it for the service that we do provide for you. We'll see you again sometime, folks.